according to the police officer I spoke to, they went through a list of questions in order to ascertain whether or not she was safe and determined that she was okay to be on her own on the streets of Victoria, barefoot in November, and they left her there. That was the last time anyone ever saw her.
You are listening to Emma Filipov is Missing, an ongoing series by the Nighttime Podcast.
When Emma Filipov vanished from a busy Victoria, BC intersection in November of 2012, the effects were felt far and wide, most notably by Emma's family and friends who were left to pick up the pieces, which to this day they're still trying to fit together in hopes they lead back to Emma. During the investigation into Emma's disappearance, information uncovered led to suspicions being directed towards a member of the search team. This one-time friend also felt the effects of her disappearance. In his case, it was both in the form of loss of someone he claims to care deeply for, as well as the loss of acceptance in a community that now largely considers him a suspect in her case. Anyone who's been following Emma's unfolding story will be well aware of tonight's guest. The CBC documentary The Fifth Estate portrayed him as a potential suspect, and he was discussed several times during the second part of my series on Emma Filipov's disappearance. I'll allow him to introduce himself now.
I'm Julian, and I was a student in Perth for 2 years. During my first summer there, I met Emma, and we became friends. She then left Perth, and I was without news for just over a year until I saw her again in Victoria. Following her disappearance, I was involved in the search, and later on I became a suspect. I was portrayed on the Fifth Estate as a potential person of interest in the investigation. Ever since, I've been, in the aftermath of the episode, and people wondering exactly what my role in this whole story was.
While preparing the second episode in this series, I contacted Julian and invited him to tell me about his time with Emma and to discuss the puzzling coincidences that led to his name being brought up so often as a suspect. After speaking to him briefly, he agreed to share his version of the events with me, in part due to his belief that many who suspect him do so based on incomplete and misleading information that was given in the Fifth Estate documentary. Tonight's episode will allow Julian to tell you his story via excerpts from our recent telephone conversation. You will hear him share his complete timeline, describe the nature of his relationship with Emma, provide his explanation for many of the startling coincidences we all know, discuss his use of the word stalk in his message to her father, and reveal a new detail about Emma's last known day that will create another coincidence, this one perhaps even more significant than those already publicly known. My goal is to provide a non-editorialized version of Julian's narrative and to simply allow him the opportunity to explain himself, something he feels he was not given by the Fifth Estate. We will start 16 months prior to Emma's disappearance in July of 2011. At this point in our story, Julian's a student attending schooling for woodworking and Emma's living at home with her dad, both in Perth, Ontario. The two first meet at the Stewart Park Music Festival. During our recent conversation, Julian described their first meeting to me.
I first met Emma in July of 2011 in Perth, Ontario. There was a music festival going on that weekend. I saw her right away when I entered the site. She was in the booth of a photographer. For some reason, even from a distance, she caught my eye. So I walked into the booth, and while I wouldn't say that I pretended to be interested by the photographer's work, because it was actually very good work and quite interesting, but I mostly went in to see who this person was. So we talked for a bit with the photographer to each other. At some point, I asked the photographer if it would be all right to ride my bike to his studio outside of town at some point to see more of his work. And she was kind of listening and showing interest. And soon after, we left the booth. But then, not very long after that, she came to me asking me a question about whether or not I was going to the indoor concert that night. And then I asked her if she would be interested in visiting this photographer by bike someday. And And she said, oh, yeah, I would be interested. I was actually thinking about asking you the same thing. And then she wanted to go the next day, which became kind of a rabbit over the next few weeks. She always wanted to do something the next day, but I had to tell her that the photographer would still be in his booth in the park until Sunday. So our visit to his place would have to wait until the week later. But anyway, so we, in the end, instead of going on a bike ride, we ended up canoeing. So I met her on a Friday night at that concert, and then we went canoeing the next day. Anyway, it was a great weekend, but then she got an eye infection that night, and I didn't really see her for another week after that while she was getting better at home with a patch. Yeah, so we spent a fair amount of time together that weekend, and we kind of realized right away that we had a few things in common, and we kind of felt like we, I guess, knew each other more than we actually did.
From their first time meeting, and during the roughly 5 weeks that followed, Emma and Julian would spend time together, mainly alone at night. Julian spoke to me at length about the time the two would pass together.
In total, including Victoria, I don't think I saw Emma more than 15 times. Mainly we walked. Mostly we walked at night. Well, she always more or less dressed in the same clothes, certainly always the same pants, which are kind of become iconic. Typically, she would be mostly barefoot, not always, and she would be carrying her little ukulele. And we would walk all night, her carrying the ukulele, playing the same chord over and over. I think she only knew one. And chatting about different things, about her trips, about her little bit of time in China, having lived in Nova Scotia for a while her sister was studying there. Yeah, so she would tell me different stories like that, but she was never asking personal questions. She just liked to be around people for who they were, who they are, not without spending much time trying to learn their history. She, for some reason, she either didn't want to or didn't have the ability, if I can say, to plan a week or two ahead of time. I don't know what it was, but it certainly was interesting to always wanting to do something the next day, which was kind of nice for me because, well, I was more than happy to do something the next day, but at the same time, it was kind of an interesting way. I never met anybody like that.
When listening to Julian describe the time he spent alone with Emma, it may seem as though it was the start of something romantic. But when I asked him about the nature of their relationship, he explained that the one time things went in that direction, the relationship would change entirely, never to return to its original form.
Well, there was no relationship beyond friendship. I mean, I never really liked being called an acquaintance because I think that there was more to us than that, even though I'm not even quite sure what the actual definition of an acquaintance is. But I think it would be fair to call us friends. I never really knew what Emma was thinking of me. So we certainly were not in any kind of relationship, but she took me to her home, she took me to her mother's home outside of Perth. I met her brother. I met her younger brother. I met, we went for hikes in the woods, and we brought our dog. I think calling us friends is only fair. Most of the time, like I said, we would just walk and talk, but then one night, which must have been late again, always was pitch dark. We just sat on a bench near the tracks, and she tucked her nose in my neck, and I couldn't help it, so I kissed her, and it kind of went on for a while. Eventually, we got up and walked a little bit more, and she took my hand, and well, I was kind of surprised how the night had turned out. Anyway, we went back to our own places, and I didn't see her the next day. And then the day after that, I called, and or she called. I don't remember that part, but to say that we probably got a little carried away the other night that she liked me, but that since she was not going to stay in town for very long, she didn't want to get attached to me or anyone, and that it would be better if we stopped seeing each other. Before hanging up, she said, I prefer if you don't call again, or something like that. But then I was all night, I was working night shifts on Fridays, and I couldn't imagine how I would spend the night just running this around in my head. So I called again. I called her, and then her father said, well, Emma just told you she didn't want you to call. So I said, well, please, just one last time. I just want to have her give me a few more explanations. And she did take the phone. She was kind of, not rude, but kind of cold at first, saying, well, I think I answered all the questions. But then she kind of softened a little bit, and we talked for maybe 10, 15 minutes. When we hung up, I was feeling much better, even though it was still the same thing. It would be better off not to see each other again. And but at least it seems like the second phone call sounded better than the one before. And that was the very last time that I called her parents or her father's house. So when I was listening to the podcast, well, I don't agree that I called many times. After that, that was the last time.
With the kiss leading Emma to break away from the relationship, Julian is left believing this is the end. But as you will hear, it wouldn't be long before the pair would reconnect. But again, something would happen that would lead Emma to suggest they stop spending time together.
Well, I thought that was the last time that I was talking to her. But then the next morning, the phone rang, and that's Emma who says, well, I don't like how I dealt with things last night. Would you mind if I stopped by your place? So she did stop by at the house where I was staying, and we talked on the porch for maybe half an hour. Well, that was really nice. Once again, it was still the same story. Better if we stopped seeing each other, but at least it was done face to face. And we hugged and we said how nice it was to have known each other, and kind of wish each other's good luck. And that was it. But then there's no way to know what she was thinking, because the next night I'm in the living room reading a book, and suddenly someone knocks on the door, and the lady I was living with goes to answer and says, well, Julian, Emma's here for you. She's standing at the door with her ukulele, and she wants to go for a walk. And it's like, but I mean, Emma wants to go for a walk. You put your shoes on and you go. I was so confused, but at the same time, I was happy to see her again. And so we went for that walk, and I was more confused than ever, and I didn't know what to talk about. And at some point, I said something that kind of insulted her or that she didn't like. I just couldn't keep the silence, and for some reason, I asked her about her pants and why she never wore shorts or skirts, or why she always wore long pants, even though it had been a very hot summer. And anyway, depending on my choice of word, she didn't like the question. It was not a question that I should have asked. There must have been a reason why she was always wearing the same clothes. She was not your average woman who is wearing something different every day. And, well, basically she felt more comfortable the way she dressed, and that was none of my business. But for some reason, I asked the question, and she was not impressed. So she became really, really cold after that, and we walked a little bit more. But then she said, I'd rather finish my walk alone, if you don't mind. And that was kind of annoying, because the morning before, I kind of liked how we handed things up. And that night, then I felt like, well, this might be it. But I didn't feel too good about how it all ended. So, and I was heading home to Gaspé for 2 weeks the next day. So I wrote a little card, and I dropped it off at the coffee shop where she used to work, and she had a couple of friends working there. I just wanted to say, well, sorry for being so awkward and for asking something that I really should not have asked. And yeah, so I went home for 2 weeks, and not really knowing if I would see her again. But for some reason, I I was kind of looking forward to, even though I enjoyed my time back home, I was kind of looking forward to go back to Perth.
After offending Emma with a comment about her wardrobe, Julian drops off a card of apology at the coffee shop she frequents and returns to his hometown in Quebec for a two-week vacation. Despite his time away from Perth, Emma stays on his mind, and he looks forward to his return and hopes the two will reconnect again. It would only take Julian 1 week in Perth before the first of many odd coincidences would occur, this one resulting in his last meeting with Emma prior to her move to Victoria, BC.
That's when the coincidences kind of started. One night, someone drives me home, and I was working on a farm for the summer, and he drives me home after at the end of the day, and just in front, just at the top of the hill, I see a woman walking barefoot but wearing jeans, and I'm thinking, well, that looks like Emma, but except for the jeans. So I get home and jump on my bike, and I think, well, I'll go see who that is. But before I could make it to the top of the hill, Emma came out around the corner, walking out of the street where she lived. But it was kind of weird how it happened, where I just see this other person who reminds me of her, and then she shows up. I asked her if it was okay to walk with her, and she was not too keen. She hadn't liked the fact that I had bothered to drop the card for a friend to give to her. She said that I was not patient enough or something like that, that maybe we were not as similar than we didn't have as much in common as she first thought. But I kind of insisted to walk with her just to explain myself. So we walked for a little bit, and she started to listening and talk, and things were looking better. And even though I wanted to keep walking with her, at some point I said, do you want to finish your walk alone? I think I'm just going to go home. And she said, no, you can stay. And then we walked a little bit further, and then we hugged and said goodbye, and we both felt that that was possibly the last time that we see each other, and that was the last time I saw her in Perth. And even though that walk started out with her being kind of cold and well, not interested in talking, it ended up like all these other nights when it was just great to be in her company.
With his final goodbye marking the last time Julian would see Emma in Perth, another coincidental encounter would now have Julian running into Emma's dad. It's during this meeting that he would learn of Emma's recent move out of province.
One night, or one day rather, I was riding my bike in that residential area where the bench where we had kissed was. I just wanted to see how that place looked like in the daytime, because like I said, every place seemed like a special place with Emma in the nighttime. But so I went around by bike, and then there was her father walking a big black dog. So I asked her, is Emma gone? And he said, yes, I believe she went out west as planned or something like that. So that was as much as I knew. I never wrote to James, to her father, while in Perth, but I had sent a couple Facebook messages to her mother, because since I knew her father, I knew her brother, her young brother, I had met the dogs, I had been to her house. It would have been nice to know who she was, since so many people told me about her. So I sent her a couple Facebook messages, which I later learned she never read until much later after I left Perth. But basically, I was just asking her to have a little chat, and I was just curious to meet her. And I'm sure I would have been tempted to ask about news of Emma, but since I never met her, I never heard about Emma after last seeing her. I knew she was gone. I didn't know when she was gone or where. And the next time I heard from her was when I saw her in Victoria.
With Emma moving to Victoria in fall of 2011 and Julian staying in Perth, there would be over a year of non-contact between the two. But as Julian's schooling is completed in spring of 2012, he's no longer tied to Perth and begins to plan for a move. We are now met with another coincidence as Julian decides to move to Victoria. He explained to me the factors that led to him choosing Victoria as his new home, ultimately arriving there 3 months prior to Emma's disappearance.
Well, I spent an awful lot of time debating about where I was going. I thought it was kind of a neat feeling to finish school and knowing that I could go anywhere on the map. I had found out while in school I was studying woodworking that I was kind of allergic to wood dust, which is kind of impractical to kind of inconvenient for a woodworker. And I had been doing a lot of paddling. I started considering more and more going west so I could paddle year round and work outside. And I analyzed statistics of climate and all kind of things in Canada, bicycle. I don't drive. I thought that being out west I could commute by bike year round and not have to depend on bus schedules and so there were many reasons that led me to go there, but I was mostly thinking about Vancouver Island, but my plan was to go somewhere like Bamfield, I had heard, or some remote corner of the island. I had heard that half of the town of Bamfield had no car at all, and that was very appealing to me, but it took me so long to decide on where to go, and I was kind of in no rush to leave Perth, but I knew that I would leave by, well, late summer, early fall. And then to go to a place like Bamfield, which is in the middle of nowhere on the coast, might be a bit risky to find work. So I started considering Victoria, where I could at least find a job there for the winter and then hopefully move on in the spring. And I was still debating about where to go. It could have been Victoria, it could have been Nanaimo, it could have been Campbell River. I didn't know much about these towns at all, but I was kind of all considering all the options. And then I found out that this Irish band, which I've been trying to see for many years, was coming to Victoria, and that was it. I had been debating for a while where to go, and I had to make a move, and so I chose Victoria. I figured, well, I'll go to the concert, I'll find a job. I contacted an outdoor store in town, and they basically said, as soon as you get to Victoria, stop for an interview. And then the lady who owned the farm while I was working in Perth had a friend who lived in Victoria. He was a doctor in Victoria. And he had been renting rooms apparently in the past, and she gave him a call, and he was still interested in renting me a room. Yeah, so for all these factors, I chose to go to Victoria. I arrive on August 27th and started working on August 29th or something like that. So it all happened pretty quick.
When many with knowledge of this case consider Julian's activities, they look at his move to Victoria as a very suspicious coincidence. I asked Julian if he had knowledge that Emma would be in Victoria, and this is some of what he had to say.
She could have been anywhere, but yeah, as far as I knew, she was out west. I mean, to be honest with you, I was hoping I would see Emma again one day, but yeah, that was just a hope I had. I certainly didn't choose, maybe unconsciously. I mean, she had told me how nice Vancouver Island was, how nice the weather was. She had asked me to maybe travel west with her. So maybe in the back of my mind, it influenced my choice to travel west, but it was mostly for personal reason, climate, work, the ability to paddle year round. She could really be anywhere. But when I... That first morning, my first morning in Victoria, when I went and walked to my to the store where I was end up working, just around the corner there was this little store with "Love, Peace, and Freedom" written on the stairs, and some interesting, free-flowing, colorful clothing in the windows. And I had this thought that if Emma was in Victoria, this is probably the kind of place she would have gone to. But I mean, this was just a thought. I never I never thought that she would be there. So I had no way to know where she was, but I did think about her that day when I saw that that store. And a month later, that's the exact spot where I saw her.
Now, at this point in the story, both Julian and Emma are living in Victoria. It would be on October 7th that their paths would first cross, a little over a month after he arrived, and a little over a month before she'd last be seen.
It was Sunday. It was a beautiful October day. It was my lunchtime. I went to a coffee shop where I'd never been before and grabbed a sandwich. And on my way back, I saw someone who really looked like her. And I had left my glasses at the store, so I was kind of leaning over and squinting, trying to make sure it was really Emma, and she was doing the same thing. For some reason, we kind of spotted each other from across the street at the same time. We kind of stayed there frozen for a second, and then it was me who eventually crossed the street, and I didn't quite know what to say or what to do. We were both shocked, and she was smiling, so that was good. But then she was the first one to hug me. I was kind of keeping my distance and saying hi and what are you doing here? But I didn't want to push it, since I didn't quite know what her reaction would be to suddenly see me like that. But she was super happy to see me. She gave me a hug. She said that she had she kept saying wow and how strange it was, because she had been thinking about me not that long ago. It only lasted about 10 minutes because I had to go back to work, and I didn't ask where she lived. I didn't ask where she worked, but I didn't ask any personal information. I told her where I was working, which was just, well, two doors down, and then she asked me what days that she would stop to see me sometime, and I asked her if it would be, if she would like to stop and meet me at 5 after we closed, so we could go for a bite. And she said I don't know, you know that I never plan very far ahead. So even though it was maybe 1 o'clock, she really didn't know how her afternoon or how her evening would be like. But she was super happy to see me, smiling, hugging me twice before I left, and I was on a cloud. The surprise was so big, and she looked just the same as she did in Victoria, back in Perth. It was a beautiful sunny day. I've told the police. I've told Shelley. I've told everyone. Those were the 10 best minutes of my life. And even though everything after that became very dark and sad and shocking and a nightmare, I wouldn't trade those 10 minutes for anything. It was great. I was on the cloud for about a week after that.
We now reach another point in this story that many look at as a very suspicious action by Julian. It's at this point he sends the Facebook message to her father, where he seems to admit to stalking Emma. That message would sit unread in his other folder until after her disappearance.
She kind of let it sound like she would stop by and see me in the next, well, maybe see me in the next few days. And I was actually off the next couple of days. I was kind of looking forward to go back to work on Wednesday. Because I had told her that I was working Wednesdays to Sundays, I was kind of looking forward to go back to work, hoping she would stop by. And it seems like every time someone walked into the store, I would look, hoping that it would be her walking in. But that never happened. And I didn't ask her where she lived or where she worked, because I was, I guess, knowing myself, I figured that if I did, I might be tempted to stop by her work and say hi. I really wanted her to, unlike in Perth where I had her home phone number and I knew where she lived, in Victoria I didn't have a clue, and I figured that if she wanted to see me, and she surely sounded like it, she would know where to find me. And that was right downtown. That was easy to get to. But then I started thinking about this concert coming up November 1st. And I had been waiting to see this Irish band for so long. And I thought, this will be an awesome night. And it would be even more awesome. It would be perfect if Hema would come with me. And even though I thought this is probably a bad idea, but I sent a Facebook message to her father saying I'm a little bit desperate. I was really hoping to see Hema again so I could invite her to that concert in 3 days. If you are in touch with her at all, you can let her know that I would. I'd like to invite her. She can just stop by my. She can just stop at work or send me an email. And I never heard back.
As you just heard Julian explain, he doesn't hear back from Emma's dad, and she doesn't visit him at work. Regardless, within a few weeks, he would again run into Emma, but this time things would be very different.
I don't know the exact date, but it was not very long after the concert was supposed to be November 1st, and a few days later, I'm walking out of, or I'm at the library, rather. Suddenly, I see this person walk by, just by kind of the corner of my eye, and it kind of looks like Hema. And she walks out, and I follow behind and kind of walk a little bit faster so I can step in front of her and have a good look. And I say, well, so it is Hema. So I start, I say hi, and then I could tell that she was not. Emma that night was very sad, very dark, or maybe not sad, but looked tired, and that's what she said. I'm very tired. I'm going home. She didn't want. I said, did you recognize me in there? She said, yeah, you look familiar, which is kind of weird considering that she recognized me the last time from across the street, and now she's a few feet away, and it's like, you look familiar. Anyway, it was not fun. It only lasted maybe 2 minutes. I said the same thing. If you need help with anything, or if you want to see me, you remember where I work. So I left, and she left behind the library. I later found out that she was that she had been staying at Sandy Merriman. At the shelter at different times, and that's where, well, the shelter is somewhere out there behind the library, so that's probably where she was staying at the time. So early to mid November. I never, weirdly enough, even though I went to that library often before and after. I mean, every town I traveled to, the library is a place I often go. And even though I saw her that night there, I never thought of making a point of going back the next few days, because, well, I think Emma was had her routines. Like, she would walk and she would go to the coffee shop when in Perth. I could have thought that she would go back to the library more quite often and made a point of going. But I never thought about that. So that was the last time. Well, not the last time, but that was the second time that I saw her in Victoria. And unlike our first meeting, that was really nice and all smiles. That was, I didn't know what was going on, but there was obviously something going on.
We now arrive at Julian's third and final encounter with Emma. One which many, including myself, have not heard about prior to my interview with him. Forming another major coincidence to add to the list, as you're about to hear Julian explain, he will again run into Emma, this time on the morning of November 28th, the day she would last be seen.
For a while I was debating whether it was November 27th or November 28th, eventually looking at Facebook pictures where I had been kayaking on the 27th, I had to narrow down that it was the 28th that I took the bus that morning, heading downtown to the government building to bring in my healthcare form, and which I hadn't taken care of yet. And while standing on the bus, even though we were moving at maybe not at high speed, but the bus was moving, heading downtown, and then I saw this person on the sidewalk facing the road, who kind of looked like Emma, even though it didn't quite look like her. But out of curiosity, I got off the bus a few stops earlier and then walked by her. But since she was standing right on the curb, basically facing the street, so the only way to look at her in the face would have been to stand on the road. So I just walked beside and behind her a couple times, and I couldn't tell, but actually I was more sure that it wasn't her, because I mean, her hair, I'd never seen her hair like that. It was like a mane. They were very wild, kind of all over the place. Usually her hair were, well, somewhat straight, always long, or all tucked in a hat or something like that. But that time it was like a lion's mane, and she had a big jacket on with somewhat puffy with a fur hood, and all kind of bags, plastic bags, shoulder bags in her hands, on her shoulders, and I didn't think it was her. So I walked back to the government building to hand in my form, and a few minutes later I stepped out, and the woman was still, I didn't move, was still there on the curb facing the sidewalk, or facing the road rather. And this time I stepped on the road and looked at her in the face, and it was Emma, and she didn't look, well, I guess her face looked like her, but everything else about her looked different. And I didn't ask, I don't think I asked, how are you, because it didn't seem like the appropriate question. It was pretty obvious that she was probably not doing all that great. I asked, do you want to talk? And she just shook her head. She didn't say no or anything. She just shook her head. I really didn't have a clue what to do. So I just said what I had said the last time at the library. If you need help with anything, or if you want to talk, you know where to find me. And I walked away, but then I stopped at a bus shelter, maybe 100 meters away. And I just leaned on the bus shelter there for a few minutes, wondering what to do. She didn't look well, but she also looked like someone who might be waiting to catch a ride with someone. So maybe a friend was about to pick her up. I didn't know what to do at all. I considered going back to talk to her again. I thought about staying there to see what her next move would be. I don't think I really thought about calling someone. I was mostly thinking about either staying there and seeing her next move, or moving away, and that's what I did. I back in Perth and now here in Victoria, I could never tell what she was thinking, and to see her in that state, and to always, she would always lead me to have these kind of happy moments and sad moments, and I didn't know, since she hadn't stopped by the store, and now to see her in that state, I was kind of, it was such a contrast to October 7th when I saw her, and it was all smile, and it was awesome, and I just decided to walk away, and kind of, I was thinking in my head, literally, I'm done with you. If I next time I see you, I'm not gonna stop. I'm not sure if I would have managed to do that, but that was my plan that morning. I thought, I don't think there's anything I can do for you. I mean, I knew, yeah, she seemed like the kind of person who would not accept help, and so I thought, yeah, I'm walking away. If she shows up at the store wanting to talk, yeah, for sure I'm going to talk, but otherwise I'm never going to make any effort. Since it was the third time in 3 months that I was seeing her in Victoria, I figured that I might very well see her again, but I kind of made a commitment with myself that the next time I would just walk by, or I would certainly not get off a bus to to go talk to her that I was basically done with her. And but things turned out to be I was all but done, because that was November 28th, and then basically December that year was all about Emma.
After the bizarre final encounter with Emma, it would be a week before Julian would learn of her being reported missing, and only hours after hearing the news, Julian would cross paths with Emma's mother, Shelley, and join up with the search party. You may recall Shelley describing this encounter in part two of the Nighttime Podcast series on Emma's disappearance.
A few days later, early December, I wanted to move into a new room somewhere closer to town than where I was staying. I had found a few places I wanted to go visit. And then I got an email that morning while still at home from the lady where I used to work in Perth, telling me that she woke up to the news on local radio back in Perth that Emma was missing. I thought it was kind of a weird to be considered missing within 5 days, because, well, I thought she was elusive enough that she could go on for much longer than that without giving news to anyone. So I didn't quite understand why she would be considered missing since I had seen her only a few days before. And also because, well, I was just, I didn't want to be worrying about it anymore, or I basically didn't want to be thinking about Emma at this point. And I already wanted to get my, not my life back, but the first 2 months in Victoria had started out so well, and now November had been rather dark and sad, and I was thinking, well, if I find a new place to live closer to town, with maybe rent a room and with people my age, it might be help me get involved a bit more in that city. So I left town and went, not left town, left home and went visiting a few apartments, but none of them were great. So I went back to the downtown library to go back to the computer. I don't have a laptop. I didn't have a cell phone at the time, so my only computer access was either at home or at the library. That's why I went quite often. And I walked in there, and Shelley says that she looked at me and got up and came to talk to me. I don't know if it's that important who saw who first, but the way I remember, and I remember it very clearly, I walked in, and yes, there were a lot of people sitting in front of those computers, but I saw this woman, and I had been, well, when I sent her that message on Facebook a year earlier, I got to see her profile picture, and there was also a picture of her standing with her son at graduation, I guess. So I got to see a couple pictures of her, but that's all I knew of her. But I saw this woman there, and I approached her, and I said, are you Emma's mom? And she, she got off that chair very quickly and said, and kind of asked me if I knew anything, and I just said, I'm Julian, and I'm a friend of Emma. I knew her from Perth. We talked a little bit. And then she said that she was on her way to the coffee shop, where there was a friend of Emma that was there, along with one of his friend, and they were getting a Facebook page started, and that I should go and meet them there a little bit later that day. And, well, I went there, met them, and for the next few weeks, well, I was part of that a search team, I guess we can call it.
With the month of December rolling on, Shelley Philipoff and her search team pursue the many leads that have been coming in via the Help Find Emma Philipoff Facebook group. During this time, Julian was among the inner circle of the group, dedicating significant amounts, if not all of his free time, towards the search. Julian's relationship with Shelley and the rest of the team was, however, about to take a dramatic turn. When the Facebook message Julian sent Emma's dad referencing stalking is now read, suspicions would begin to be directed towards Julian.
It started out one day when I walked at the library again, and Shelley just happened to be there. She was finishing sending some emails. Not long after I sat down, she said, "Look at me in the eye, Julian, and tell me that you didn't follow Emma all the way here to Victoria." She said, She said Emma's father just found out about this Facebook message that you sent him, and I swore that I hadn't followed her to Victoria, but and yeah, that was just a hard moment there, because I felt so stupid using the word stalking. I felt not stupid, but I felt hurt, because even though I understood what was going on, I had been quite involved, and to be asked like this, did you follow Emma, and all the things that we've said, or is that all the thing we talked about, was that true, or was that all a lie? And that was just, it was shocking and hurting, and even though it made sense for her to ask me that, I knew what the truth was, and it was still hard to accept. And she, after kind of things settled down a little bit, she asked me if I wanted to go check a few places and ask them about security cameras that had been, if there was any footage that would be available of Emma. Because unlike the police, Shelley said that she had all the time in the world to go through that footage and maybe see something. So I went there, and I did a few hotels and restaurants near the Empress Hotel where Emma was last seen. But that night I wrote to Shelley to say, well, I'm pretty much done. The energy was gone and the motivation was gone. I said, if there's any serious lead and you need someone to look into it, call me. But I was not going to be there day to day anymore.
With suspicions now directed at Julian, it would be less than a month before he would hear from the Victoria police. They wanted to ask him several questions. Mainly, they wanted to know what he meant when he said he was stalking Emma.
I think it was in February, so it would be like a month later. I got a call. I got a call from Victoria police, and they asked me if I could stop by the police station for an interview. And I did, and the interview lasted about at least an hour and a half. And we talked about a lot of the things we're talking about now. And obviously he asked me to explain why I had used the word stalking. I don't know exactly why I came up with that word. I mean, everybody who's listening can tell that English is not my mother tongue. It's not my first language. I misused the word. I never stalked her in any way. And the only reason why I use the word is that I'm not, I guess the word crush is maybe not quite appropriate, but I don't usually make that kind of effort to keep in touch with anyone. And I just found that I called a few times too many, even though she would tell me that it was no problem, that her father was okay with it. I would call, and then she would be gone for coffee, or she was having a nap, or she would be in the shower, and her father would say, "Well, call again in 10 minutes," and that's what I would do. I just felt like I called too many times, more often than I was comfortable with, and then bringing that letter or that card to her friend at the coffee shop, even though it's very, there's nothing wrong with that. Thinking about it afterward, I was not very comfortable with it. I wish I had let her come to me more. So anyway, I used the word stalking, and when I explained what I just said to the police, they said, well, we have our definition of stalking, and you have yours. They don't have anything to do with each other. What you're describing here is not stalking by any stretch. And we had a good conversation. All of it was filmed. For a while, the guy who had interviewed me left to discuss it, I guess, with someone else. And he finally came back and said, you are free to go. So I left, and that was pretty much the end of it for a while.
With the Victoria police satisfied, Julian would have several quiet months. However, just prior to the one-year anniversary of Emma's disappearance, he would now hear from the RCMP. They'd also have questions, except much darker in tone. And they wanted him on a polygraph machine as he answered.
The second week of November, probably, I was at home. And then two police showed up on my doorstep. They introduced themselves as being RCMP officers, and they said, well, the case had been passed over from Vic Police to the RCMP, and they wanted me to do a polygraph, a lie detector, that it would be a very good way to clear my name and finally be left alone if I accepted to do it, but that I didn't have to. And so we scheduled the polygraph for December 5th. November 28th went by. As expected, it was a tough, was a very sad day. And then December 5th came around, and I showed up at the RCMP station for the polygraph that afternoon. Lasted about 3 hours probably in total. Weirdly enough, the polygraph was not so much about stalking, but really about murder. They kept asking me from every possible angle if I had been involved in her murder and things like that. It was I thought they would be asking me. I thought the whole thing would be about stalking and following her, but in the end, it was more about whether or not I had murdered her. And those were shocking, very absurd questions to be asked. I don't drive. I didn't have a car. All I did around Victoria was ride the bus or ride my bike. I was renting a room in someone's house, and I was living with them on the same floor and seeing and talking to them every day. I didn't have any friends or not, except for co-workers in Victoria at the time. So there was no way. It just seemed so absurd that I could have pulled something like that. There was no way I could set something up like that. And the questions were just having murdered her. And when I left, I asked the officer, I said, are you going to leave me alone from now on, or there's a chance that you will contact me again? And he said, no. He said, basically, even though we focused on only a few questions, it was enough to give us an over a very clear idea of your, well, whether or not you had been involved in hurting Emma in any way. So that was the end of it.
Despite a second round of police questioning, Julian seems to now be outside of the suspicions of law enforcement. But in terms of public opinion, Julian is still largely suspected, and this is partly due to the CBC documentary Finding Emma that he believes intentionally provided viewers with incorrect information and a vague explanation of the many key details as a way to make him seem more suspicious than he is. A deciding factor for Julian providing me the opportunity to interview him was his hopes that providing a more complete telling of his story will shed light on the many shaded parts left after the CBC's coverage. I'll leave you, the listeners, to decide what you believe Julian's involvement may or may not have been in Emma's case. As far as what Julian believes became of Emma, he had this to say.
I don't know. I never wanted to believe in kidnapping because that was too bad a scenario. I didn't believe in suicide at first because I didn't think it was possible. But after listening to the Fifth Estate and hearing her say the page in her diary where she mentions that she knows someone will be reading this, and I'm not so much focused on I'm dead Emma, but more about I know someone will be reading this, and I cannot imagine at any time Emma being okay with people reading her computer or reading her diaries. To me, that made me think that she was planning on committing suicide, because I can't imagine her being in a world where people would know that kind of stuff, unless she had planned on disappearing very far. Yeah, I really don't know. There's no good scenario. If she's dead, I'm sad that I'll never see her again. And if she's still alive, I just hope that she's in a good enough place.
Given that he saw her on the morning of her disappearance and that so many consider him involved, I did ask him the obvious question that many want to hear answered. people are going to ask what your activity was during that day and that night. Do you recall what you did that night or where you were?
All I know is that I was somewhere, probably on the bike, somewhere on the bus, or somewhere at home. But I could never say for sure where I was that night. I was probably home because I was working the next day. But I think the facts are clear enough that I was not involved, except that I saw her that last day. And instead of standing there to find out what wrong was going on, I walked away. And I didn't help. I walked away.
That will conclude tonight's episode. I'd like to thank the Help Find Emma team for their dedication to the search for Emma and in their support of Shelley as she continues her march through every parent's worst nightmare. If you'd like to show your support, please join the Help Find Emma Filipov Facebook group. And if you'd like to join the conversation with Shelley's Help Find Emma team, they invite you to join the Help Find Emma discussion group. If you're interested in hearing more content from the Nighttime Podcast, you may be interested in joining the Nighttime Patron Group, where for $1 a month, you'll have access to a monthly bonus episode. You can join by visiting patreon.com/nighttimepodcast. That's patreon.com/nighttimepodcast. And with that said, on behalf of myself and the show's listeners, I'd like to thank the continued support of the show's current patrons and welcome the newest members of the group, Roberta, Jonathan, and Raiho Magnifico. In addition to providing me pride and motivation, without you, the production of the show would be impossible. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Nighttime Podcast. If you enjoy your time here, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show on iTunes. To stay up to date with the show, please follow me on facebook.com/nighttimepodcast, as well as on Twitter, where my handle is @nighttimepod. If you have any story ideas or feedback, I always like hearing from you at nighttimepodcast@gmail.com. I look forward to hearing from you again soon.
The Nighttime Podcast is written, hosted, and produced by Jordan Bonaparte. Copyright Jordan Bonaparte.